A Gathering of Days, A New England Girl's Journal, 1830 to 1832, by Joan W. Bloss. Chapter 3, Sabbath. Weather was inclement. However, we went twice to church, where, as he will ever do, Priest Fowl's dog barked noisily at the late arrivals. 'Twas odd to see the dog at this office, for the cold was so severe, it rendered each breath into puffs. Bark, puff, bark, puff. Monday, November 29th, 1830. I have searched just everywhere. Today I carried my writing book home. Father had said he wished to see it, and Teacher Holt had granted permission exactly on that account. Now neither I nor M can find it. Looking with care throughout the house and in unlikely places, I do recall that I set it down next to my cap and muffler and mittens as we started home. We only paused but once on the way, and that to pick some pods and grasses close by the side of the road. I have not yet told Father of this, and how will I tell Teacher Holt how I've misused his trust? I pray the book be safe where it is, and that I find it tomorrow. Tuesday, November 30th, 1830. Aunt Lucy hurried round today. We were so newly returned from school, she must have noted the very moment when Cassie and Asa reached the house and then set out for ours. It was not me she wished to see, nor Maddie for that matter. But here she came, all bundled up, and asking Father as he'd harness to mend. Or so he'd heard from Mr. Shipman, that is. Would he, and so forth, be so kind as to repair the leather strap which she now put forward? It had somehow rent apart and came from one of her trunks. Father queried as he took it if she'd soon be leaving. Oh my, no, she answered him, her voice gone high and not her own, and both hands vaguely waving. Well, it's no trouble either way. I'll have it right in a moment. But she'd already removed her cloak and fanned her fingers to the fire, lightly moving the kettle aside with a practical gesture. Aunt Lucy knows her way at a hearth, and, as I've observed at the Shipman's, cooks most tastefully. But in our house there was naught to do, nor would Father engage her in talk, but sternly attended to his needle and its linen thread. Maddie stared quite openly, but I made a show of inspecting closely her trousers of Father's, I'm sorry, some trousers of Father's, that he put by as being in want of mending. Now did Aunt Lucy, speaking too brightly, wish aloud she'd brought handwork along with which she might join the party. None of us more than nodded at it at that, and Father soon presented her to her firmly overstitched strap. Aunt Lucy thanked him prettily, and then she had, or so she said, truly to be leaving. Father spoke lightly as he fastened the door behind our departing guest. Do you suppose we ought to have asked if she wished a bit of cider? Maddie, too, had a question to ask. Hers not of her own devising. Are you going to marry Aunt Lucy? Sophie says. Her mother says. Maddie, too, had a question to ask. Hers not of her own devising. Are you going to marry Aunt Lucy? Sophie says, her mother says, that's what you ought to do. You tell Sophie, Father said, and poked a thread through his needle. You tell Sophie and her mother We've done fine just as we are. Would you not say so, Catherine? I nodded contentedly in agreement, liking the way he said my name and pleased by his approval. So if the ladies are wanting a wedding, I rose and swung the kettle back as he continued speaking, they'll have to find them another man, if not another maid. He looked as if he might go on, did not, and fell to stitching. Presently, he began to sing, putting in hums where he missed the words, which for a father happens often. Wednesday, December the 1st, 1830. I cannot think what has transpired. Still is my lesson book missing. Fortunately, none seemed to notice that I wrote my lessons on fool's cap pages. I was in fear of discovery all the day. Did another scholar mistake it? Surely he would have brought it to school, unless kept home on some account. And will bring it tomorrow? The pond ice being thick and black, as will happen when cold persists with no snow between, we disported there after school. When we girls grew weary of skating, the boys cut branches of evergreens and quickly pronounced them royal sleighs upon which we would ride. How festively we laughed and called, pretending we were ermined queens, and leaning back against the bows while, before us, the boys' long strokes carried us over the ice. Among us, only Sophie was spilt. Worse than that, when she stumbled over, you could see her pantaloons. I should have died of shame, I know, had it befallen me. And worse still than the pantaloons, it was revealed to one and all that Sophie ties around her stockings a piece of scarlet ribbon. Thursday, December 2nd, 1830. Lo, my lesson book has returned, and in the queerest way. There is a nubby boundary stone that separates the schoolhouse lot from the woods that belong to the Wally Piper, where both lots front the road. My book was there at the close of school, just as plain as anything, as if it had been set down. At first, I dared not trust my eyes, certain it could not have fallen there. And who, I ask, would place it thus, and in such risk of harm? However, I dwelt not on such thoughts, but taking it gladly into my hands, turned the familiar pages, each of them a friend. Then on the cover's inner side, just below my name and the place, a stranger and intruder amidst that company. In all capital letters, it reads, please, P-L-E-E-Z, miss, take pity. I am cold. The letters seem drawn with charcoal and are raggedly formed. I know not what to make of it, nor can wait to tell Cassie and Asa. I want to show you the letters, how they appeared. There they are. Friday, December 3rd, 1830. I could not speak of them. Sophie met up with us on the way and dogged our steps to school. Returning, Maddie had a cough, must go directly home. I supposed she had taken a chill, the weather being harsh of late, and she but a bit of a child. Arriving, I blew the fire up, then out to the pump to fill the kettle, and hung it to the flames. While we waited for it to heat, I rubbed her feet between my hands and kept her warm with blankets. The water ready, I wrung out a flannel, sprinkled it lightly with turpentine, and laid it on her chest. This I did to prevent cold from taking firmer hold. Mrs. Shipman, hearing of illness, came round to offer help. However, she found all I'd done in order and did not amend the treatment. M is resting now. Father ought to be soon returned, as it is close to dark. Today he is logging with Mr. Shipman down toward the pond, I think. Saturday, December 4th, 1830. When I stepped out to the yard this morning, a bit of paper held between a stone promptly attracted my eye. Although my fingers were clumsy with cold, I hastened to smooth it open. "Wait at the rock," it said. Although it lacked a signature, I knew the writer was Asa. What rock, however, and when ought I wait? No other meaning seeming to fit, at last I concluded that A knew something about my lesson book. Could he be the one to have taken it? No, it seemed not likely. Mayhap it's reappearance. Mayhap it's reappearance. Mayhap its reappearance? I knew I could not puzzle it out. Therefore, with what eagerness did I await our meeting? How hard it was to not begrudge Father and Maddie the time they took with their preparations and the morning meal. 'Twas a little of this and a little of that. And, quote, "Catherine, do stop fidgeting. It makes a man uneasy." I thought he never had tarried so long over common meats and cakes. Forgive me, I skipped a line. Let's start all over. How hard it was to not begrudge Father and Maddie the time they took with preparing, with preparations and the morning meal. 'Twas a little of this and a little of that. And I didn't skip a line. Quote, and then Father goes, "Catherine, do stop fidgeting. It makes a man uneasy." I thought he never had tarried so long over common meat and cakes, and asked for bacon, too. At last, with all in tidiness, I set out for school. The sky had brightened, giving light, when I came to the rock. The wind, though light, seemed to glaze my cheek and brought tears to my eyes. I stood there clapping my feet together, they taking turns to be clapper and clapped, and marking how thin are the soles on my boots. Never intended for frozen ground or standing about of the morning. How he been there? Had he been there before me, or would he not come? Had I misread Asa's message? At last, I heard the school bell ring and knew I could wait no longer. Public mortification now compounded my woes. On account of my late arrival, I must pass before all the scholars, and so to my place. My face turned red as a smithy's in summer. Teacher Holt did not rebuke me. He must have seen the extent of my shame, considered it sufficient. During the recess interchange, when girls going out meet boys coming in, Asa contrived to approach me. "After school, in the same place." Then he must pass on. There is so much more to tell, but I can write no longer now. Shall resume tomorrow. The next day. I followed A into the woods, he having appeared as he said he would, and soon showed me the boot prints he'd found near where I'd seen my phantom. They were sharp and deeply imprinted, as if they'd been made when the ground was soft, then caught fast by the freeze. Clearly, a man's boots they were as to size, the prints themselves being widely spaced to suggest a long-legged stride. "Whose?" I asked. "Oh, Kath, you know, your phantom and no other." But this would be a real man. "Asa, no mere visioned phantom. That manner of man do you, what manner of man do you suppose? A black man, you said, at least dark completed, complected. I'd suppose a runaway slave come to here for hiding." "A Negro, Asa?" We had never known before, neither slave nor free. So I couldn't know what it might mean to call him dark complected. Though I tried to give lively argument, I knew him to be right. "Any man will leave prints where he walks, and these say naught of his color. Perhaps it was just a runaway lad, not liking his indenture. What Asa liked not was timid suggestion. "No," he asserted, it need not be a poor Negro slave. It might be a thief or a man convicted. Maybe he was meant to hang and escape to the woods. Is that what you would have him be rather than a slave? Besides, what difference would it make?" Behind Asa's figure, I saw tall trees, and hidden by them, what manner of man, where in these woods might he be? Then Asa looked at me levelly, and I, staring back to return his gaze, noticed as I never had that one of his eyes is lighter in color than is its companion. "It doesn't really matter," he said. "Suppose that he was wrongly convicted, and this his hope of freedom, a good life later on." I was in such a whirl. Asa was saying, "Whoever he is, he's cold and needs us to help him, Kath. Who are we to judge?" Thus was it revealed to me that Asa had found my book on the rock and read the inscription there. But Asa's father had not seen. "Turn him out and turn him over. Asa," I said, "we must go home. I have to think on it." I have not spoken to Cassie yet. Intend to do so tomorrow. The end of chapter 3.